Blessed are the poor who know the beauty of simple things and freely share. Blessed are those who mourn, for they dare to risk their heart by giving of their love. Blessed are those who do no harm, for they make the earth a more gentle place to live. Blessed are those who do more than hunger and thirst for justice, for they seek justice in how they live. Blessed are those who show mercy, for the tender-hearted know the gift of giving. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they are one with themselves and the universe. Blessed are the peacemakers, for theirs is a divine connection with all that lives. Blessed are those who are oppressed by hatred and greed, for in time, if we devote ourselves to becoming the beloved community, the truth will set them free. I welcome everyone here on this glorious, almost fall morning. The asters are blooming, and the goldenrod is just flaming on the prairie, and all kinds of sunflowers. So it's just a beautiful time of year. Take a moment to greet those around you with cheer. If anyone is interested in finding out more about what it means to be a member of this wonderful community, please speak with me. I would like to share these words from Wendell Berry to help us move into the spirit of lighting our flaming chalice. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in the beauty of the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought or grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Now let us stand as you are able and sing hymn number 95, There Is More Love Somewhere.
Thank you.
Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like, please share a brief personal expression of a special joy or sorrow or some wonderful mix.
Hello, Carrie and I have been gone the last couple weeks because we've been in Michigan getting married. We are now Mr. and Mrs. Roberts. Thanks very much.
Congratulations.
Yes.
I'm Stu Stanton, and we've been gone a while, too. And just to add to yours, we're celebrating our 43rd wedding anniversary, so you've got a little ways to go.
Morning. I'm Kathleen Oldfather, and I had a message from Bryce Hobrock yesterday that his brother passed away yesterday.
Oh.
And for those who don't know, his brother had a brain tumor, and he didn't live that long after it was diagnosed. But the last 8 days or so were kind of long waiting.
Yeah.
And there will be a service probably in 2 weeks in Natoma, Kansas.
Enel Forrester, I shared with you some time ago that my daughter's in-law's father was in hospice, and he finally passed away on August 8th. And we made a quick trip back from D.C. to be with him and for the service on Sunday. But he is on his way. Both opas are gone now.
Montemani, and I just want to let you know that on the tables this morning you'll find a small container of comb honey, and that you are welcome to try. And remember that way back in World War II, we didn't have gum, and everything was rationed, no butter, no honey, no nothing. Well, they gave us beeswax for chewing gum, so try a little if you'd like.
Hi, Pat Embers. I just returned from a really wonderful gathering called the International 13 Indigenous Grandmothers Gathering in South Dakota in Spearfish. And it was a very spiritual earth awareness kind of presentation and just being there with them. So I feel very good about that. And I'm also happy because our daughter is home, Sheila. So it's a good week.
May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and of course all those people and animals we hold dearly in our hearts. All right, it's time for some fun.
We are looking for children. Come on down. Piper, are you going to come join us? Okay, let's hand out the signs. This morning, we are going to... You guys can stand, please. Thank you, sorry. We are going to make sure all of the adults know our seven principles song. Can we line up from seven? Okay, Colton, can you stand over on this side with Lily? Could you take him? And are you going to hold a sign or sing a song? Organized chaos. That's what kids are. Holden. Oh, here. Can we get you guys to hold this one with Colton? Colton, would you like to hold? Or, I'm sorry, Logan, would you like to hold that one? Okay, let's see. Three. Who's three? Okay. Hold them up high. Now I need all the adults to stand up. Find a partner. And we're going to let Molly start us because she sings far more on key than I do. And there are hand symbols and things.
And we know we've done this before. If, for those of you that have done it before, I bet you've forgotten. For those of you that haven't done it before, this is really important, and we do it every week when we go back. We have all the kids together for just a few minutes, even when we're splitting into classes, and our kids know our seven principles because of this song. So, all right. So one each person is worthwhile, and it's to the tune of Doe a Deer, a Female Deer. So, all right, ready? One, and shake your hands. One.
Each person is worthwhile.
Two, hug your neighbor.
Be kind in all you do.
Three,
we help each other learn. Four, and search for what is true.
Five is the best. Five.
All people have a say.
Six, work for a peaceful world.
Seven, the web of life's away.
That will bring us back to me
and you, you.
All right. Thank you very much. I think the goal is for us to do this a couple times a year to keep you grown-ups in the loop about what's going on.
This is one of my favorite Sundays of the month, Helping Hand Sunday, and today we have a representative from CASA, Jamie Morris Hardiman. Welcome her.
Well, thanks for letting me join you, and thank you for choosing CASA to be one of your Helping Hands organizations. I've been with CASA 16 years tomorrow, so have given a lot of my life to work with abused and neglected kids here in our community. I'll tell you about one case that I served with two little kids who were 4 and 5 when they came in the system. Their mom had physically abused them. The little girl went to school wearing a hoodie, and it was a warm day, and the teacher said, "Can you take that off?" And she had a handprint bruise on her face. And so they came into foster care, and they were so very fortunate because the day they came into foster care, there was an opening with Lon and Kathy Ostrom, who are local foster parents, who have now adopted 6 of our CASA kids. And they lucked into that placement that day. These kids, the 4-year-old was nonverbal. There were lots of issues and questions of if he might be autistic. Nobody knew. He'd had no testing done. The 5-year-old had temper tantrums that would last for 2 hours, where she would dislocate the foster mom's arm, just scream on end. She had been horribly abused in previous places she'd been. They bounced around from family member to family member. And we were able to work with them, the foster parents, and the agency that serves these kids, to make sure that the kids got specialized evaluations at KU Med. The little boy was diagnosed autistic, was able to get some services. The foster parents paid out of pocket for him to go to K-State for speech therapy. The little girl was able to get some very specialized mental health services locally with Amanda Campbell, who in my mind is an angel. She is the most amazing therapist in town working with young children. She provided amazing service for this little girl. And after about 2 years, their parents gave up their rights, and Lon and Kathy adopted these two kids. They now are in second and fourth grade and are doing amazingly well. The little boy's in a regular classroom. You would never know he had had no speech at all at four. The little girl does fabulously. She hasn't had a tantrum like she used to have in years. They're just normal kids now, living a normal life. And I was so fortunate to get to play a role in that, that I got to advocate for them in the court system and advocate for them to get the services that they needed and advocate for them to find a loving home, a safe, permanent place where they could thrive. That's my job as a CASA volunteer. In our community right now, we have about 120 CASA volunteers who are working, serving on average about 150 kids a year. So if you could imagine walking into a school, that's about 7 classrooms full of kids that need our services, and we're not serving every kid who needs an advocate. So there's still a need. Your support is going to go supporting the work of our advocates that are out in the field, but more importantly than that, what I want to ask you today is please help us spread the word that we need advocates, and in particular, we need men. Our volunteer base is about 15% male. About 50% of the kids we serve are male. We have boys that are on a waiting list right now because the judge has said that they have to have a male CASA volunteer. They need that role model, and we don't have men to give them. So if you can help us spread the word about the need for male CASA volunteers and all CASA volunteers, we want everyone, don't want to exclude anyone, but we definitely have a need for more male CASA volunteers. So please help us to spread that word. That's the most important thing you can do for us today, is just let people know abuse happens in our community, and there are kids who need your voice. So I so appreciate you letting me come and talk to you about what we do at CASA. It's amazing the difference you can make in the life of a child if you're able to give just 10 hours a month. So thanks for your consideration. I appreciate you having me today. It's great to be here with you.
Hope for the world. As all of you know who have been around Unitarian Universalist circles and communities and have been a member of this community for years, it does not offer an easy fix for the complex problems of this world, where we find problems everywhere. It asks each of us to be engaged in being part of the solution, a real part of the solution, not one that's faked. Are you doing it out of guilt? It comes out of a place of love. It asks us to be living in a way where we do not allow ourselves to be repeatedly trapped by gloom, and doom and all that stuff that wants to drag you into some dark place where there's no escape. Where does one find the courage to remain open to the innate goodness inherent in all life? The ability to find joy when there is so much woe. Our progressive faith asks that we celebrate diversity, which would include the full spectrum of emotions, from the darkest moments of despair to the most glorious moments of victory, when we feel like everything has come together and nothing can stop us. We are on top of the world. To hold that tension, to be able to hold that tension, is essential spiritual practice. I'd like to read a poem by a recent poet, who recently won the Pulitzer Prize. He's been around for a long time. His name is Stephen Dunn. This is not the poem. Here it is. It's called Before We Leave. Just so it's clear, no whining on the journey. If you whine, you'll be stuck somewhere with people like yourself. It's an unwritten law. Wear hiking boots, pack food, and a change of clothes. We go slowly. Endurance won't be enough. Though without it, you can't get to the place where more of you is asked. Expect there will be times when you'll be afraid. Hold hands and tremble together. If you must, but remember, each of us is alone. Where are we going? It's not an issue of here or there. And if you ever feel like you can't take another step, imagine how you might feel to arrive, if not wiser, a little more aware, how to inhabit the middle ground between misery and joy. Trudge on. In the higher regions where the footing is unsure, to trudge is to survive. Happiness is another journey, almost over before it starts, guaranteed to disappoint. If you've come for it, say so. You'll get your money back. I hope you all realize that any time is a fine time to laugh. Fake it, however, and you will fake it for however, and false laughter will accompany you like a cowbell for the rest of your days. You'll forever lack the seriousness of a clown. At some points, the rocks will be jagged, the precipice sheer. That won't be the abyss you'll see looking down. The abyss you'll discover, if you've made it this far, is usually nearer than that. At the bottom of something yet to resolve, are posing as your confidant. Follow me, don't follow me. I will say such things and mean both. It's a fine set of guidelines for life, living one's life, I believe. No whining. Well, we all whine sometimes. So, okay, sometimes. But don't make it a practice. That's not a good practice. Wear sensible clothing. Don't wear clothing that binds you and makes you feel like you can't breathe. Breathe. Bring along some food. You always need a snack, especially at 3 o'clock when you're starting to fade. You need some protein, some good, rich carbohydrates. Endurance won't be enough. It won't be enough. But without it, you will never get to that place where more of you is asked, where you are asked to call upon deep resources that you don't imagine you have but do. It asks you to reach out for help when you need help and not to allow yourself to wither alone. Inhabit the middle ground between misery and joy. Keep on moving. Keep on moving. Don't stop. Even if it's in your heart and mind, if you're crippled, you can still keep on moving. Happiness is a kind of fool's paradise. It's not the target of life. A full, rich, embodied life that encompasses all of the emotions, all of the experiences that we know in our own body and being and mind. It's not to push some out of the way. It's to hold them all in a good balance. The abyss is closer than you think. At the bottom of something that you have yet to resolve. It's not some dark night of the soul thing. We all have those areas in our lives where we know we can fall into and feel like we are just losing it. Just losing it. Simple things can trigger that feeling, that emotion, that free fall downward. So the abyss is much closer than we think. So we should be mindful. We should be moving as slowly and surely as we can and as fast as we need to if there's danger. Follow me. Don't follow me. I will say such things and mean both. The importance of working with paradox cannot be heightened enough. Paradox is one of the most amazing gifts that life gives us. If you can hold two things in tension, you are able to gain strength, flexibility, durability, and an ability to see beyond black and white, right and wrong, good or bad. It's complex. There are nuances. There are shades. There are many colors in the rainbow, just not seven. They include all the range of colors. Follow what seems and is most true for you. Not what someone else tells you is true, but own it, like Emerson said. Burn it through the fire of your own thought and experience. We need both skills, the ability to follow and to be a leader. Having a vision that calls you into greater possibilities that you're not aware that you can accomplish is something that we all need to get us moving beyond our comfort zone. Something that touches the far-off reaches of possibility and brings expansiveness like the bow. The bow that stretches and stretches and stretches and stretches, so flexible. And then the arrow that releases and finds its target. It's both. It's that flexibility, it's that tension, and it's the release, it's the soaring. We have the seven principles as we sang them this morning, and they are good guidelines. As UU minister Reverend Barbara Wells Ten Hove explains, the principles are not dogma or doctrine, but rather a guide for those of us who to choose and join the Unitarian Universalist religious community. After the merger in 1963, Unitarian and Universalist were experiencing such an increase in pluralism and diversity, a demand for all kinds of paths to be represented to leading to wisdom, not just through Christianity or Judeo-Christianity or through this or through that, but a whole span, a whole spectrum of possibilities that could help you find who you are in this world with grace and dignity. We sang those principles. They're wonderful principles. But the UU principles in themselves will not provide you with a deep foundation to live from, to grow from, to build from. It is our responsibility, each of us, to grow our own ability to live out of those principles in a way that we embody them. The more you live out your beliefs in small and big ways, there is actually less room for doom and gloom. and a lot more room for joy. Marvin Lavener, senior pastor at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Tulsa, believes that often our UU principles are like seeds that are tossed on thorny bushes and rocky soil. The thorny weeds in congregational environments where they cannot flourish. Such weedy patches, according to him, include cultures where the religious norm is reactionary or where political and secular ideologies dominate the discussion, where there is no room for talk about God or prayer or other spiritual things that help people move deeper into the interior life. We need the full spectrum, the full intelligence, the full heart, not just parts of it. In a congregation unified by a vision of what they are individually and collectively called to live out in the world, their embodiment of the principles transcends any list, mental making list, any poster that comes out of a workshop that lists the 8 things that we're going to do in the next 10 years or the next 4 years or the next 3 years. It's more than a list. It's that arrow releasing. In Charlene Hunter Galt's essay, Lifting My Voice, she reflects on her life gifts that ground her in social action, the gifts of self-empowerment her mother gave her, her grandmother, and the Black community she was raised in. Knowing in her gut how important it is to choose love over hate, the central principle of universalism. Choose love over hate. When she was a little girl, she sat on her grandmother's knee while she read the newspaper, patiently waiting for her to be done. And when she was done, her grandmother would give her the comics. That was what she had been waiting for. Her favorite was the one that featured Brenda Starr, a reporter from the New York Flash. Charlene loved Starr's life of adventure and romance. How fearlessly she traveled the world, her ingenious ways of figuring impossible things out. Charlene dreamed of such an adventurous and romantic life. One day, she dared share this dream with her mother. Mama, I want to be a reporter like Brenda Starr. Her mother didn't flinch. She replied softly, well, if that's what you want to do. This was Covington, Georgia in the 1940s, a small segregated town where Blacks knew to keep their place on the right side of the tracks. They had their own churches, they had their own schools, and if they went to a store, civility stopped once the ka-ching of the cash register was done. And there was one movie theater that African Americans could go to, and there they played movies like Tarzan and Gone with the Wind, where Blacks played mammies and butlers. Charlene says, and yet from some deep historical reservoir, my mother knew the power of dreams. She instinctively knew if her daughter wanted it enough, she'd find her path. It is important to have a dream, no matter how old you are, no matter what your circumstances, to have some dream that you are living, the encouragement and the support to follow it. The elementary school she attended was one of those separate but equal schools where the books were used from the white, were used books from the white schools with missing pages. When it rained, their playground turned to red mud. Once a year, the Black people in her town held a fundraiser to help overcome those huge deficits. The child of the family that raised the most money was crowned king or queen. Charlene got the crown one year, a diamond tiara. She became insufferable, and she would never take it off. She had to go to the shower with that tiara on. But finally, she put it down to everyone's relief. In 1955, her family lived in Alaska for a year. She was the only black kid in her class. She made friends because she said, "I am comfortable in my own skin." Now, that's a good question to ask yourself. Are you comfortable in your own skin? At prom time, she didn't have a date, but she went anyway. Her two white male teachers saw to it that she got to dance. They were gay. They danced with her. She didn't hold any of this against her classmates and has never felt anger or hatred towards whites, even though the street she grew up on, Brown Street, was named after a white man who fathered several black children, including her grandfather. She attributes her lack of hatred to growing up in a religious family and a church-going community that taught love, not hate. And I just saw that film, The Butler, last night, and there's a scene in the church where, in big white lights, love, not hate. God is love. So whatever that means for you, however you translate that, love over hate. It's important to have affirming role models, teachers and parents. It's important to be an affirming role model. Teacher, parent, friend, uncle, cousin, neighbor, citizen. She was taught to do unto others as you would have them do to you. This, she believes, helped protect her from hate in the years to come. After a year in Alaska, her family returned to Covington, where she blossomed in her all-black high school, learning about Ida B. Wells, the muckraking black journalist, and Henry McNeil Turner, a black activist. She says, if they couldn't give us first-class citizenship, they were going to ensure that we got a first-class sense of ourselves. In her senior year, two Atlanta progressive black leaders came to her school looking for students who might be interested in attending an all-white college, the University of Georgia, which had been all-white for 197 years. Without hesitation, Charlene agreed. When she showed up at the university under a court order, hate-filled crowds greeted her with, "Nigger, go home! Nigger, go home! Nigger, go home!" Students rioted. Hundreds gathered in front of her dorm, one throwing a brick through her window. This forced her to draw on resources and reservoirs of strength that had been given to her by her family, her community, and by example set by good people. And she recalled during that time when it was so scary, when she didn't know if she would be murdered. Her grandmother lived by, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil." So she had a mantra that she kept on saying to herself, "Yea, though I walk through the shadow of death, I fear no evil." We each need words that comfort us and lift us up when we are tired and weak and feeling like, "I just can't do this." Or if we're afraid, we need images and stories and poems and limericks to help us remember the better parts of ourselves and the possibility of a better next minute. Charlene joined an upstart, she lasted through 4 years at University of Georgia. She made a few white friends. She joined the journalist staff and wrote for the school newspaper. By then, young people across the streets were sitting at lunch counters and marching in streets. Charlene joined an upstart black newspaper headed by activist M. Cal Holman with Julian Bond as managing editor. She spent weekends and holidays writing stories about Atlanta's often jailed yet steadfast demonstrators. She watched as her friends were jailed, exposed to hatred and violence, but she refused to harbor anger. She knew that they were simply doing what they were brought up to do. Take control of your destiny, she told herself, without ambivalence or fury or fear. Now that's a good guideline. Take control of your destiny without ambivalence or fury or fear. After graduation, she went to New York City, where William Shawn, the vaunted editor of the New Yorker, invited her to join the staff with other young graduates who came from all Ivy League schools. She quickly moved from typing rejection slips to becoming a reporter. She was the first black ever to hold this position at the New Yorker. She kept her focus and she kept herself attuned to black lives and the civil rights movement, and wrote about black people's lives in ways that were rarely portrayed in the media, with their full humanity, with their warts and their beautiful smiles. The full picture, not a partial, sentimental, or angry picture. A full picture of what it meant to be black in America. What gives Charlene Hunter Gault the tenacity of belief and her ability to fully participate in finding meaningful work as a black woman entering the workforce in the 1960s and to persevere in her advocacy for African-American empowerment is a testament to her heritage, her family, her community, her religious community, all those people that believed in her at the University of Georgia. She relied on all of that support to lift her up to become a reporter for the New York Times, a journalist reporter for the PBS Evening News. It helps a great deal to have a dream and a family who believe in your capacity to fulfill that dream. If you don't have that kind of family, create that family, weave that network of support with people that understand who you are and who you want to be. Don't let your family drag you down. But if they lift you up, go with it. But you have to take care of that dream inside you and not let it get oppressed and squashed and destroyed. Charlene Hunter Gault's life embodies all of the seven principles with great dignity. To respect the inherent worth and dignity of anybody here requires that you respect the inherent worth and dignity of yourself. That's good work. How do you do that? You do it by living out what you believe. You do it by choosing love over hate, being courageous over being cowardly, taking a risk when it would be easier to stay in bed and hide under the covers those mornings when you don't feel like getting up because it's just too darn hard. Some of those mornings are okay. We all need those mornings when we just say, I'm not doing anything. But if you have more mornings like that than ones where you say, no, I got to get up because I have something to do in this world, you better look at your game plan. Look at what principles are guiding you. Look at that spot where things get blocked off and say, no, I'm going to get that out of the way. when you can't get out of bed because you feel too blue or racked by grief, or if a loved one is dying, the seven principles are not a source of inspiration or consolation. One would turn to for help or guidance. If someone's dying, you don't say, "I respect your inherent worth and dignity. We are connected to the interconnected web of all that lives and exists. And yes, I think and I believe in democratic process. And yes, you have the right to believe what you want to believe." That's not going to help when someone's dying. You have to draw from deeper places within yourself. You have to have developed a whole range of resources that you can draw on to be with that person in an honest, authentic, and loving way. And maybe it is just by being silent. As many of you know, or at least some of you know, that in the spring we had a book group that studied the new Jim Crow. It was just a heart-wrenching, almost impossible book to get through. It is just filled with the worst kinds of statistics and stories that you can imagine. It is just darker than is almost possible to endure. John Exdell wrote a letter to the people in that book club. And he says, "Dear member of the UU New Jim Crow Study Group, I spoke to the K-State Black Student Union at its September 9th My Brother's Sister's Keeper Forum. Around 100 of the members were present. The meeting focused on the shooting of Michael Brown and more generally on the pattern of police profiling of African-American citizens, which his death brought to light. My talk to BSU focused on the 2013 American Civil Liberties Union report titled, The War on Marijuana in Black and White. As you know, the report provides evidence that in Riley County, African Americans are three times more likely than white people to be arrested for marijuana charges, even though the studies show there is no difference in percentage of people who use it. It's the same for blacks as it is for whites." The K-State Black Student Union has decided to press for change and the Riley County Police Department's policies and practices. It is very likely that other K-State minority organizations will join this effort. However, the Black Student Union is counting on support from church and civic groups in Manhattan. So I'm bringing this to your attention so that you might help us in this effort. Your study group, six people, at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship last spring was a big help. I will talk to the UU Social Action Committee next week. So even though sometimes it feels like you're reading this impossible book and it's very hard to get a substantive conversation going because you're feeling so horrible, you don't even want to move into this material, it has produced an inspiration that is now finding its way in the world. So it was a small thing, and it's becoming a bigger thing. How do we help ourselves and others so that there isn't this kind of discrimination in the world? That's the essential question. We need our UU principles. We need all the stories of how people have helped one another move from darkness into the light, or whatever way you want to picture this. We all need to step up and to participate and to fully give ourselves with love to all these problems. It's about showing up, trudging on, making sure you got the right shoes, a little food, not expecting great happiness. to keep on, keep on, keep on going on. Charlene continues to renew her commitment to the civil rights movement by reciting one of its mantras, keep on, keep on, keeping on. She uses the values she was taught in her Black community as a child that shapes how she writes about its history and the relevance to their and our shared ongoing struggle to create a world in which diversity is seen as an asset and is celebrated. Her vision of a world where people are not judged by the color of their skin or the God they worship or the person they love, but rather by the content of their character, promotes Martin Luther King's dream of the beloved community, where love is the North Star that guides us towards finding and creating that life of promise. I know that there are so many good deeds that happen all the time with all the people that are in this room. There are so many things that everyone in this room does on a daily basis that helps. We do good work. I see it all the time, and it gives me great hope. So if you would like to share some story of hope that has brought you out of doom or has brought something into clarity and coherence and stability where it was in chaos and ruin, or whatever, something simpler, what stories of hope do you have to share? Larry.
Well, this is about one small piece of what you talked about. What you said this morning was marvelous. But taking just one small piece, don't fake laughter, okay? Long ago, I made it a kind of practice never to tell my wife I thought she was pretty unless at that very moment I really thought so. Mm. In other words, never fake it there. Mm-hmm. Now, I can imagine situations in which that would really screw things up, but but that has been my practice, and it's turned out over 30 plus years to be a good and useful and positive practice. And your talk encourages me to expand that you're saying be honest, and I'm certainly more comfortable in my skin when I'm at least not dishonest.
That's right.
Harriet Yonke, since he brought that up, I'll just relate that when Al and I got married, we said every night we were going to say we love you before we go to sleep. And we did that for 56 years before he passed away. There were a few evenings it was pretty hard. And we might have said, well, I disagree, but I love you anyway.
All right, the spectrum here.
I'd like to just share something relation to this that has more to do with our earth and the elements and loving them. And that was what I experienced with the oldest of the 13 indigenous grandmothers, Grandmother Agnes from Oregon. And we experienced a lot there, but one of them had to do with water and loving water. And being realistic about future water, what they even mentioned as future water wars and you know, just really problems with getting water. But I think what was, it really stuck with me. It really sunk in about how you love the water, how you take care of the water, how you, you know, no matter what you're thinking of and doing with water during the day, that you are aware of this and bless this and thank this water for being there and the Mother Earth. And I think that falls very much into this realm of love and hope, because the hope is there when it comes to water and on the earth.
Thank you, Pat. Now, I've left plenty of time for sharing so that we could share this morning, knowing that often it's not possible. So I'm inviting you to percolate. You'll get to eat soon. Kalina.
Kalina Stanton. Stuart and I have had the good fortune of having wonderful mentors in our life, and our neighbor is 96, and we live in a neighborhood that has college students and that sort of thing. And I asked her one day, she had next to her some college students that had dogs and ducks and all sorts of stuff, and I said, Vera, how do you put up with the students? And she looked at me and she said, if you're the oldest lady on the block, you better be nice. And she has the most amazing support system in her life because she has that attitude.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Mark Clark. Something to share. Recently, I was taking a break from work and laid down on the couch and turned the TV on to PBS, or I seemed to migrate to, and came across the show that is called Across All Waters. It's about the African-American experience in the United States before it was the United States, since it was the colonies, 1600s. And I think I'm reasonably well informed about the world around me, but discovered that I really didn't know much of anything about the African-American experience. And it was so timely because Ferguson happened immediately after or before. And if anybody has the opportunity to see this show, I'm going to be buying the DVDs soon, and we'll share with anybody. But it's quite an experience, and it gives you the opportunity to see things from their viewpoint. And it's not a propaganda by any stretch, I don't believe. It's very well done, and from voices in all communities that shared their thoughts and ideas about their experience. So anyway, if you want to know more, holler, and I'll tell you. So. Thanks.
Katie?
I was sitting here thinking, what do I have to share that's a message of hope? And then I remembered just last night, my oldest daughter, who's a young teenager, she's gone through a couple of very difficult years dealing with a clinical kind of depression, where she's really not wanted to get out of bed in the morning, not wanted to go to school, not wanted to see her friends. Really, it's been really hard. Pardon me. But last night, for the first time ever in her life, she asked her dad and I to take her to a live music concert of her choosing. Now, we forced this kid to go see terrible music like Bonnie Raitt, like Los Lobos. We take her to music, and she doesn't appreciate it a bit. But last night, for the first time, she said, there's this YouTube sensation, Lindsey Stirling, playing for free at the K-State Union. Were any of you there? It was awesome. So we're all out on the Union Plaza, open air, beautiful autumn feeling evening, and this performer is up there. And I've never seen the Union Plaza filled with people from Seton Hall to the other side of the Union. And she had the best time. So it was just a wonderful moment of hope for us. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, sometimes it has to be your friends reminding you how you did something good in the past, and then, gosh, if you did that, you can get through this, you know, or whatever. I'm Sue Pray. Anyway, they do have things, you know, called anchors. It could be a special ring or a necklace or a something that reminds you of that day, like if you hit a home run or whatever, and you can draw on that when you're having a tough time thinking, oh, yeah, I remember that home run. So that's my hope as well.
Mm-hmm. It's almost time. Well, in October, we're going to be doing a program. A friend of mine and her son was diagnosed with terrible dissociative mental disorders when he was 16. And until that point, he had been president of the school, you know, head of everything, just the bright and shining star of their lives. And it has been a 14-year spiral down into the most awful places imaginable, and now lifting up year by year as it gets older. So I think that we often don't want to talk about our bad feelings because it's like not fun, and it isn't necessarily fun, but if you don't share them with someone, you keep them inside, they tend to grow. So mental health. Doug, go ahead. Yeah.
Hi, Sarah Lott. I guess I was trying to think of something to share, and something that happened this week. I had one of my best friends call me, and she was just in a very bad place, and I guess she'd been that way for a week or two, and I had no idea because she's so far away in Virginia, and it hurts me when I get those kinds of calls, but at the same time, it brings me joy that she was able to reach out to somebody and call, and that I was able to give her some little bit of hope to get her through the rest of her day. And it's just a reminder for myself to be that person, and also when I'm that way, to remember that there's somebody to reach out to, that there are many people that are willing to provide that. So that's my glimmer of hope.
Bob? Are you getting away? All right.
I'm Bob Patterson. There are two things to say for me right now. Is one, I really appreciate moments like these. To me, this feels like a Quaker meeting where we wait for inspiration to bubble up and to say something. And the other thing I have to say is not in response directly to what Larry said. He was just in the way, and I'm teasing you. But sometimes to reach out of those moments where you are in the depths, you need to recognize that beautiful things continue to go on all around you. And as, while Larry spoke, some little kid off the path bounced down the hill, bouncing hair, bouncing face, clothed in red, and it was just a very lovely moment.
Yes, those lovely moments are great. Anybody else like to share something? And then we'll wrap up and eat some pancakes.
Jim Chanteau. As a sometimes jazz musician, I've often been struck by the wonderful music we call the blues. It's a 12-bar pattern. It was created by African Americans, and all that is considered the truly novel American contribution to music. Nobody else came up with the 12-bar blues. But I never figured out, why is it called the blues? Because it can be such the happiest music. And when I'm playing the blues, 12-bar blues, You know, you get lost in it, and it's a good place to be.
That's why they wrote it, probably.
Happiness and sadness go hand in hand, Jim.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for sharing. And I hope that in some way you can carry messages of hope in your heart to all those that you love and extend out further and further. Let us now sing our closing hymn, 391, Voice Still and Small. Let's sing it twice. To share these closing words from Theodore Parker, a great abolitionist, a Unitarian minister. Be ours a religion like sunshine goes everywhere. It's a temple, all space. It's shrine, the good heart. It's creed, all truth. It's ritual works of love. It's profession of faith, divine living. Have a divine time with pancakes, but please wash your hands before eating. Barbara had to go home due to a gastrointestinal illness, so this is a request just to wash your hands and be safe. So let's go enjoy.